Hi, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia. They're Mitchell.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch lists, all under 30 minutes or your money back.
Mia, this could be the biggest episode we've ever done. Slim is away camping this week, so it is M&M season yet again. Mia, how do you feel about camping?
I have never been, Mitchell. I have never been once. I'm an indoor baby.
Slim not inviting Mia and Mitchell for the camping sessions. I understand how it is.
I don't like to be dirty. That's why I'm inside at the movie theaters.
Exactly. I am also very much not an outside person. I was born indoors and I will stay indoors.
Same.
Inside the nice air conditioning this week, we will be discussing Dear Old Esther, coming back for Orphan First Kill, Idris Elba fighting a lion in Beast, Alison Brie in Italy, and Spin Me Around, and get your thoughts on the movie where Colin Farrell got his wife and all of us pregnant.
Okay, yes. Much Colin Farrell talk up ahead, but first we got to talk about that orphan, Esther.
That orphan, she's back.
Yeah, if you're ever curious about her very first kill, there's a new movie coming out that will tell you about it. It is called Orphan First Kill. And it is directed by William Brent Bell. It is going to be in theaters and on Paramount Plus. 9.4 thousand watch lists and a 2.8 average rating. So this new installment follows Esther after escaping from an Estonian psychiatric facility. Lena Klammer, that's Esther, travels to America by impersonating Esther, that's Esther, the missing daughter of a wealthy family. But when her mask starts to slip, she is put against a mother who will protect her family from the murderous child at any cost. That's Julia Stiles.
That is Julia Stiles. Very exciting to see Julia Stiles in this movie. And I go way back with Orphan. Saw Orphan, the 2009 original movie, in theaters when it came out, and lost my mind in theater. I had not a lot of idea what to expect. I honestly went into it as a big fan of Vera Farmiga and Peter Sarsgaard, who are not in this new one, but I was super stoked just to see it for them. And that twist in Orphan blew my mind. I really lost it and just love that movie. But so I've been excited for this one, but I know that you only saw the original Orphan for the first time recently, right? Getting pumped for this one. So how did you feel about the OG Orphan?
I knew the twist because at this point, everybody knows the twist, the orphan twist. So it's interesting that you got to see it without knowing.
No idea.
That infamous twist. But I knew the spoiler. So the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, ooh, hoo, hoo, I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen and I know what's going on. So I still had like a lot of fun even knowing. That's why I had put it off so long. I was like, why would I watch it? I know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it is a fun ride. It was also very psychosexual. The Orphan films are a lot more psychosexual than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Which is always a bonus. That's a bonus for me. Yeah. So it's been how many years since the first Orphan?
13. Quick math.
It's insane. And she's playing a younger orphan even.
Yeah.
It's the prequel.
You know, you mentioned Julia Stiles is the mother in this, and Julia Stiles, huge fan of Julia Stiles, a child of... I was born in 1990, so I was at the perfect age for 10 Things I Hate About You and like Save the Last Dance. Like, I am all in on Julia Stiles, and getting to see her back and doing some pretty fun stuff in this was very exciting.
She has dark hair and a gun in this
movie.
She has a gun. Like, give Julia Stiles a gun.
We've got a couple of reviews here for Orphan First Kill. I'll shout out Jake's review, who says, "It's not as gripping as the first one, but I think the prequel is self-aware of its silly premise and runs with it in a serious manner that works most of the time. There's also a twist midway through this movie that I didn't see coming that helps separate itself from the original."
And then Raina's review. "This honestly feels like one of those direct-to-video sequels that we would have gotten in the 90s video store where they say screw it and throw a wild idea at the wall, and I can't help but respect it." I agree, Raina. We're here to have fun.
They're making choices in this movie. And that's actually a perfect lead into our next movie, which is certainly some choices were made for Beast, directed by Baltazar Kormákur, coming out in theaters this week on 5,000 watch lists. The synopsis: a recently widowed man and his two teenage daughters travel to a game reserve in South Africa. However, their journey of healing soon turns into a fight for survival when a bloodthirsty lion starts to stalk them. The big pitch for the movie, I mean, that's a whole synopsis, but really, all you need to say, Idris Elba fights a lion in this movie.
Yeah, and I hear they got the CGI lion from RRR.
the same one. If you see
the
it,
same
if you
one,
watch,
he's really
watch
in demand.
Trailer,
yeah,
yeah, he's like the Uggy from The Artist, the Uggy dog. You know, it's just that CGI lion is gonna be everywhere. He's gonna be at the Oscars. We all know we're gonna see him.
Idris Elba. Can we talk about Idris Elba for a second? Because
we
he's
can
my
always
close,
talk about Idris
yeah,
Elba.
He is my close personal friend. I have spoken to him recently for about 4 minutes. So, you know, that's
that is a bond. That's
how
a bond
you talk
that's
to
never
your friends
be broken.
For 4 minutes at a time. But it was not about him punching a lion in Beast.
True.
It was about him playing a djinn in 3,000 Years of Longing. From George Miller, our other best friend.
Yeah, 3,000 Years Long. You and Slim will get into that a bit more next week, and maybe we can hear a little bit of that chat that you had.
Maybe so.
With Idris for this week. You know, one last thing on Beast for people who don't know, Baltazar Kormákur. I'm kind of a big fan of his work. He definitely works in this register of like these kind of throwback movies to like 90s era, like Two Guns with Denzel and Mark Wahlberg is a movie that I really liked. And like Everest, the Jake Gyllenhaal, Josh Brolin, a movie where they climb Everest, if you could believe that. It's like he works in that register of like he's almost like a workman director. And so I'm pretty stoked for Beast, and I respect too the fact that in like the commercials and the trailer for it, they very specifically show Idris Elba punching the lion in the face. So anybody who thinks this is going to be another The Gray, Liam Neeson, The Gray, where the trailer makes it look like he's going to fight that wolf and then he doesn't fight the wolf in the movie and everybody was very disappointed, you are going to get the fight in Beast. So look out for that.
Let's spin this around, Mitchell, with Spin Me Round. Directed by Jeff Baena and written by Baena and Allison Brie. It's going to be in theaters and on video on demand, and it is on 4,800 watch lists with a 2.9 average rating. When the manager of an Italian restaurant chain wins the opportunity to attend the franchise's educational immersion program in Italy, what she thought would be a romantic getaway devolves into chaos and catastrophe.
I hate when that happens. I hate my romantic getaways to Italy devolving into chaos and catastrophe every single time it happens.
Every single time it seems there's no other way it can go. There has to be some sort of arc. I did watch this one, and I am pleased to report that it's a little gay.
There you go.
You wouldn't think it. From the poster, which is like Alison Brie with a handsome man, and it's like parodying
like
those romance novel.
Yeah.
Yes, it's doing like a romance novel cover thing. But she and Aubrey Plaza get up to stuff. Your best friend, Aubrey Plaza.
We'll maybe hear more about Aubrey in a few minutes.
Yeah. If you stay around for a couple more minutes, you might hear some more Aubrey talk. But in the meantime, Spin Me Round also stars Tim Heidecker.
Slim's fave.
Like Slim's
shout
fave.
Shout out for Slim.
Yeah. There's also a little bit of a Terrence Malick parody. There's like a director guy who wears the big sun hat and has a beard and the glasses, and that made me giggle too. And Molly Shannon is being hilarious as per usual. But ultimately, this is a movie that was made so that the cast and crew could go on a vacation in Italy for, quote, work. They've done this for The Little Hours, also by director Jeff Baena and starring Allison and Aubrey. And that's kind of their MO, and I respect it. Like, I can't be mad about it, because if I were also like a successful director slash actor, I would be saying yes to breezy comedies in Italy as well.
Yeah, why not? I feel like, you know, if Adam Sandler gets to do it, he gets to, you know, make a Drew Barrymore movie where they go to Hawaii just to hang out and go to safaris, wherever Blended takes place. I can't remember. But, you know, Adam Sandler, he's doing that thing. The Grown Ups movies, wherever they go for those, you know, they get to do that. Why not? Why not the Baena Brie Plaza trifecta going all around the place. I also just really enjoy the meta-ness of the fact that, like, so Jeff Baena is married to Aubrey Plaza. Alison Brie wrote the movie with Jeff Baena, where now Brie and Plaza get to make out in it. And it's just like everybody just hanging out, having fun. It's just a good time. Why not?
Yeah, Aubrey Plaza is always kissing girls in these Italian vacation movies. So again, I cannot be upset about that.
Yeah.
we have a couple reviews as well. This one's from Justin. Meandering to the point where the climactic payoff largely feels unearned, but there's enough great moments and familiar faces to keep from dismissing it. But it's hard not to see this as an excuse for a bunch of friends to hang out in Italy and make a movie, which, let's be honest, we would all do too if we could. That's what I'm saying, Justin.
Exactly.
Justin, I agree.
One other review from Allison, who says, stay for Molly Shannon's character, Deb, calling everyone bitches and getting a glimpse of the number three restaurant in the world in Lucca, Italy. The film captures the essence of Italy while placing its characters in extreme situations. Despite their minor problems, it's enjoyable and a thrilling watch overall.
Molly, love her.
Before we head into the look back at last week's releases, I wanted to shine a spotlight on one more kind of smaller film coming out this week, The Territory, a documentary by director Alex Pritz coming out in theaters. It's on 1,900 watch list right now with a 3.8 average rating already. Pretty solid rating there.
That's a lot higher than all the other movies dropping this week. That's a full star higher.
If you're looking at average rating for what to watch this week, check out The Territory. The synopsis for it. The indigenous Uruwau people have seen their population dwindle and their culture threatened since coming into contact with non-native Brazilians. Though promised dominion over their own rainforest territory, they have faced illegal incursions from environmentally destructive logging and mining, and most recently land-grabbing invasions spurred on by right-wing politicians like President Bolsonaro. With deforestation escalating as a result, the stakes have become global. And yeah, like I said, this one has played at a couple of festivals already, gotten really good reviews. Wanted to shine a spotlight on a couple of reviews from Letterboxd members, like Clara, who says the film is instantly immersive and virtually impossible to step away from without seething with rage. The Territory is a depiction of indigenous and environmental urgency at its most authentic, deeply human, which means it is also deeply devastating to experience.
We also have a review from Robert. Every once in a while, a film comes along that simultaneously elevates your anger and evaporates your hope while pulling you to believe against all logic that maybe if the right people win, the inevitability of our species' bleak end can still be blotted out. Beautiful review, Robert.
One other release coming out this week that we wanted to give a quick shout out to is Glorious, a new horror film coming out on Shudder starring J.K. Simmons and Ryan Kwan. The synopsis for that one. After a breakup, Wes ends up at a remote rest stop. He finds himself locked inside the bathroom with a mysterious figure speaking from an adjacent stall. Soon, Wes realizes he is involved in a situation more terrible than he could imagine. The big shout out for this one is that if you haven't listened yet, Gemma and Slim spoke with the film's director and Letterboxd member, Rebecca McKendry, on this week's episode of The Letterboxd Show, where they chatted about Glorious as well as her four favorites, The Burbs, Suspiria, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and Survive Style 5+. Let's look back at the films that we covered last week. Let's start with Emily the Criminal, my beloved Emily the Criminal, which has gone up from last week. It's on, it got added to 4,000 new watch lists from when we talked about it last week.
And I believe it went up because you spoke to Aubrey Plaza, right? I think that that inflated the numbers.
You know, I think that that's probably, I think that's exactly true. Yeah, I spoke with Aubrey Plaza. We had a nice, you know, warm half hour chat, you know, just hanging out, me and Aubrey, you know, building that bond, just really connecting. And we got to chat a lot about Emily the Criminal, but also the big hype for me for that conversation was, you know, I'm not from Delaware originally, but I've been living in Delaware for the last 20 years, which is a very small state. If people are not aware, not a lot of famos coming from Delaware, but Aubrey Plaza born in Wilmington, Delaware, about like 15 minutes from where I live, and is, as far as I'm concerned, the queen of Delaware. We worship at the altar of Aubrey. And so we got to talk a lot about just her relationship with Delaware and things that people might not know about Delaware and perceptions of Delaware. And I think we might even have a little clip of me and Aubrey talking about Delaware.
When you mention that you're from Delaware to people, do you ever get like interesting or like weird reactions?
I mean, the top three things are: one, is that a state? Which sure. always blows my mind. Two, I've driven through there. Oh yeah, I've driven through there on 95. And then three, Wayne's World reference.
Yeah.
Oh, we're in Delaware. That's like what everybody always says to me when I say I'm from Delaware. And I'm like, wow, yeah. You're the first person that ever said that to me.
I was literally doing a podcast last night and the guy like brought up the Wayne's World thing from Delaware. He's like, the only thing right. I ever associate with Delaware. And I'm like, yep, like 35 years old, I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, I know. People don't know. They just don't know. They will. They will know.
Thanks so much, Aubrey. If you want to read the rest of my convo with Aubrey, you can head over to Letterboxd Journal now and check that out. And we will slide right into talking about Inu Oh, another film we discussed last week, which has gone up 2,000 new watch lists from when we covered it last week. And Mia, I know you heard, you know, a little Q&A from the director of Inu Oh recently, right?
Yes, I did. I got to go to a Q&A with Misaki Yuasa at Los Feliz 3, my favorite theater. And it was actually for Mind Game, his previous film, which is kind of like his masterpiece, I would say. And I had never seen Mind Game, so it was so amazing to see it in the theater. I had never seen anything like it. It is so imaginative and inventive, and like, I need to study his brain. No one else is doing it like him. So I am all in for anything that this director makes.
I want to do a shout out for Mrs. Darcy's review of Inu Oh, who said, I'm not sure there's anything I can say about a Japanese animated rock opera / political and historical epic set in feudal Japan that will capture just how insane this film is. But suffice it to say that it is more metal than The Northman and somehow crazier than Everything Everywhere All at Once. So there's your elevator pitch for Inu Oh if you haven't gotten on that yet.
Okay, Mitchell, I gotta talk vampires.
We've often have to talk vampires.
I can't go an episode without talking about vampires. So let's do that. Luckily, there's a vampire movie coming out. So
what
we have something to talk
coincidence.
About.
Yes. How wonderful.
So lucky. So this one is called Day Shift. It is on 6,800 watch lists, which is up 3,000. And it has a 2.9 average rating.
That rating is so, yeah, Slim and I both professed our appreciation for Day Shift on last week's episode. And I am mortified to discover a 2.9 average rating on Letterboxd. We got to get that at least to a 3, people, with the Day Shift. Come on. It's a fun movie. And, you know, Brandon wrote a review which agrees with Slim and I. Brandon said, it's always so fulfilling to see great stunt guys and choreographers come up and given the chance to direct. And damn, J.J. Perry killed it. This is such a blast. The action is tremendous. It's very funny and really combines horror fights and slapstick so seamlessly. Could not agree more, Brandon.
Okay, now it's time to check in on the Letterboxd Top 50 of 2022 list to see what is at the top of the list for things released this year. Big new addition this week is After Sun, which is playing at enough festivals to crack 1,000 views and land in the top 10 at number 9. It debuted at Cannes and was quickly picked up by A24. The release date is pending, but there's a lot of hype for this tearjerker, especially for debut director Charlotte Wells, and it'll be playing at New York Film Festival. This one stars Paul Mescal of Normal People. He also has another movie coming out, God's Creatures, and that's another A24. So he's kind of the new A24 it boy, it seems.
Yeah, definitely feels like this is going to be the fall / winter / awards season of Paul Mescal. You recently saw, I don't know how much you can talk about it, but you saw God's Creatures, right?
It's true. I did see God's Creatures. He wears some delightful sweaters in it.
Very, very excited. That's a perfect tease. You can definitely, you know, look forward to, I think that one comes out at the end of September, so people can look forward to hearing more about your thoughts on God's Creatures. Well, let's get into our final section of this episode where we check in on our own watch list. So we use this section to talk about what's on our watch list. We shuffle them and pick out some films for us to watch for the next time that we come on. Last time that you were on, you shuffled and got Ondine, as we mentioned earlier, which I must give a little. I looked it up after I said it earlier because it didn't feel quite right to me. Mea culpa for myself. Colin Farrell, actress in the movie, is not his wife, but they did fall in love on set of the movie, and they became pregnant. She became pregnant and gave birth to their child, but then their relationship ended not too long after that. So, correcting myself here, Colin Farrell, I believe, still single.
Yeah, I think that could be cool if he's single.
I think that would be very interesting. Great if he was single.
Yes, I did. I did watch the film. I did watch it because I am a Colin Farrell completionist. You may recall I got Winter's Tale a couple episodes back.
Shout out Winter's Tale.
I will watch anything for this guy. I have seen 27 of his movies, and would you believe Miami Vice is not one of them yet?
Criminal.
But this one was made by Neil Jordan of Interview with the Vampire and the lesser seen Byzantium, which I really like. Here he's tackling Selkies, which are not mermaids like I had previously assumed they were. They're not. They are seals that turn into beautiful women on land. And Colin here is a depressed Irish fisherman who catches a beautiful woman who might be a Selkie, and she helps him connect with his ailing daughter, as Selkies are wont to do. I'm excited about this one because I got to use my Manic Pixie Dreamfish tag, which I don't often get to use. And you've seen this one too.
I watched it as well. I also am a huge Colin Farrell stan. Looking at my all-time stats on Letterboxd, I've apparently seen 42 Colin Farrell movies.
That's so messed up.
Which is quite a lot. He's one of my most watched actors. And yeah, so I watched this. This has been on my watch list for a while. It's probably since it came out because I like Neil Jordan. I also am a huge Byzantium fan. Shout out for Byzantium. People, check that movie out if you haven't seen it.
Saoirse
Ronan, Gemma Arterton. That movie kind of rules.
But
yeah, Ondine, it's sweet. It's very like, it's really interesting because it is very like a folk, like fairy tale kind of vibe. It feels like a bedtime story, but with like a darker tinge to it. I watched it on Tubi, which for some reason, watching it on Tubi, the audio was just out of sync, but like slightly out of sync enough to kind of bother me, but not so much that I'm like, okay, I can't watch this. I have to pay $4 to rent it on iTunes instead. So my experience was a very particular one with Ondine on Tubi, but yeah, Colin Farrell, very hot in this movie.
I hear you watched a film as well.
For the watchlist shuffle last time, I got Hard Times, the debut film of director Walter Hill, who I'm a big fan of. And yeah, Hard Times slaps. It's like a neo-Western version of Cinderella Man. It's like set in the Depression era. Charles Bronson plays like a bare-knuckle boxer who gets involved with James Coburn's like fight manager. And they start doing these like street fights. It's really kind of like sad, depressing. It's using like Bronson's knack for like silence in a very effective way. And I think that what you like kind of go into it expecting it to be like an exciting kind of boxing fight movie, but it's really much more about like the capitalist exchanging of cash and like leveling up like wagers on these men who are just being like beaten to hell and like are being defined and commodified by their ability to like just knock the heck out of each other. And so, yeah, that's kind of a bummer, but I really loved it.
Well, Mitchell, maybe your next movie you're going to get is going to be very positive and feel good and lovely. Opposite of this one.
We'll find out in a second. Yeah. We'll shuffle
some
our
easy
watches
times.
In a second.
You'll get some easy times.
There you go. I've got to put easy times. I'm sure there's a movie called Easy Times. I've got to put it on my watch list. We've got some Letterboxd members who have been shuffling their watch list along with us, tagging their reviews. #WeekendWatchlist, which we always appreciate. Want to shout out a couple of those. Kayla watched 13 Lives, which we talked about recently, also starring, of course, Colin Farrell. Kayla's review of 13
Colin
Lives.
Colin chat this week.
Colin is all over Weekend Watchlist. Yeah. Kayla's review for 13 Lives. The first time they do a POV of the characters diving, I said out loud to my dog, oh man, this is a lot. Which, agree.
Yeah, I saw this one in as a screener in theaters, and I was so claustrophobic the whole time, just like shrinking in my seat. Like,
yeah, I watched it at home. It would be even tougher to watch in theaters for sure.
Yeah. Oh, E.T. was just re-released in IMAX, so we have a review from Brian. Looking better than ever on IMAX, the story between a boy and a visitor stranded on our world still holds as a marvel of special effects and a sense of wonder. The character of E.T. is really brought to life and still feels as fresh as the day he amazed the world 40 years ago, and themes of kindness and friendship still resonate to this day. Aww, E.T. got yassified for IMAX.
If you're looking for easy times, E.T. yeah, on E.T. IMAX now. Mia, let's do the thing. Let's shuffle our watch list and see what we're gonna get next. We will head into our watch list, filter by stream only, and sort by shuffle.
Oh, I feel like my watch list is entirely like thirst watches for English character actors. So I got Death at a Funeral 2007, directed by Frank Oz, because it stars my guy, Tom from Succession, Matthew McFadyen. Do you watch Succession, Mitchell?
I do. I haven't watched the third season yet. I haven't caught up with the third season yet. Cause I was I was waiting. My problem with Succession is I can't just watch one episode. So I wait for the whole season to finish and then I binge watch the whole season. But because of, you know, I'm such a busy working gal that I waited for it to finish. And then when it finished, I've just been too busy to now dedicate 10 hours to watch the whole season. So
it's a commitment. Yes. But you got to see what Tom's up to.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I'm very excited for it. I'm excited for you to watch Death at a Funeral. It's a fun movie. I saw it back when it came out. It's definitely an enjoyable ride. And him in his sweet spot of being a befuddling fool.
Yes! Oh, he's foolish? Oh, yeah. I'm super excited for this.
I shuffled and I got what I believe is not going to be a easy time for me. I got the film Umberto D, 1952.
Oh, no. That is not an easy time, Mitchell.
Directed by Vittorio De Sica. Mm-hmm. The synopsis for it: when elderly pensioner Umberto Domenico Ferrari returns to his boarding house from a protest calling for a hike in old age pensions, his landlady demands her 15,000 lire rent by the end of the month, or he and his small dog will be turned out onto the street. Unable to get the money in time, Umberto fakes illness to get sent to a hospital, giving his beloved dog to the landlady's pregnant and abandoned maid for temporary safekeeping.
That synopsis is insane. They are really just saying it all. They're laying it all out on the table for you.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
It's just like really long and like it's detailed when like all you really need to know about it is like this guy is a pensioner and he's in Italy and it's sad.
This shit's sad.
And neorealism. I watched part of it for the Italian neorealism unit at film school. And yeah, it's not an easy time, Mitchell. So good luck.
Yeah, well, there we go. Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mia, Mitchell, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And if you had the time, maybe consider rating the podcast on Spotify or leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the show.
Thank you so much to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.